Before half the crowd had passed, she was finding it hard to breathe. When she tried to keep her chest expanded, they added links to the lower stone, forcing her to use chest wall as well for breath. Her sight dimmed. She let her eyes shut, concentrating on breath alone. She heard the priests' voices, but could not follow their words. No more links dropped. She struggled, fighting for every breath. Air rasped in and out of her throat. Cold water drenched her face. She choked on it, tried to cough and could not. Before she quite passed out, they took off a few links. Then they watched as she struggled with that weight. When that too exhausted her, they removed a few more links. She longed for rest, for sleep. But she could not sleep with that weight. Whenever she dozed, she could not breathe. Again, she had no idea how long this lasted. Each painful breath seemed to be an hour away from another. She could hear the voices, hear the clank of metal as they played with her, taking off a link or so and dropping it back on. She felt other pains as the priests and worshippers prodded her, spit on her, and tried to provoke some reaction. But all that really mattered was air, the struggle to suck it in, the weight that forced it back out too soon. As the torment continued, a part of her mind was aware of the differences between this and the earlier captivities she'd endured. That night in the Duke's cells, when she'd been so sunk in her own misery that she had not even imagined worse than Stammel's anger. The pain had been real, the fear overwhelming, but as the pain and fear of a child stung by a wasp is real. Lost in the moment, the child cannot imagine that the pain will end or that any pain could be worse. The adult knows better. She pitied the child she had been, so miserable in the dark, alone and afraid, convinced that her chance to be a hero was lost forever, and how Corin's punishment had shocked her with its cruelty. She had trembled for days at the thought that she might have been whipped and branded instead. Being stripped publicly had been bad enough. And from that, she had gone to a soldier's endurance, learning to stave off pain and fear with anger and defiance, linking hope to vengeance. That righteous anger served well against Siniava, or seemed to, when she avenged her friend's deaths. Yet in Kolobia, that same anger betrayed her to deep evil. She remembered too well that mood. Black rage edged with madness, so much less innocent than the panic of the beaten recruit. Under it had been the same fears the child had, disguised but not controlled, a willingness to deal the pain she suffered. Again, as so often before, her mind filled with a vision of her childhood dream, the bright figure in shining mail mounted on a prancing horse and waving a sword. It flickered in and out of her sight, shifting in tides of pain and weakness, as it had flickered in her mind's eye these several years. Now she could see its shadow, the dark nest of fears which had brought it to life. Helplessness, humiliation, pain, a lonely death, and nothing after. She had feared these, and made of that fear a dream of power, of freedom, of untouchable strength and courage. She would never suffer that, because she would be the hero, the one with a sword, the one who was above such suffering. And here she was, bound helpless before enemies who enjoyed her pain, an example, as they said, of Liart's power. An example to teach more fear, more hatred, proof that the dream of glory had been false. No power. No bright sword or prancing horse, no protection, even for herself. But the image of her dream steadied and did not fade.